Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. I'm Jeremiah, and this is Christian Anarchy. Proud to have a more niche audience than the Jewish Nazi podcast. Something about that tagline doesn't feel right either. Scratch that. For now, it's just Christian Anarchy. We begin with concluding remarks. Pick up the pieces and examine the parts. Your words always cut when they're cliche. Here's my knife because I came for the buffet. This is the way it goes when you are part of it. Nervously saying words, little surprisingly bad. A mark beneath the chin. I've caught you once again. It's in the way you sound. Every word and phrase. Welcome to episode 7. I love, therefore, I anark. And no, I don't think anark is a word. If, while you're listening to this, or when you get done, you would like to contact me, my email address is jeremiahjm@gmail.com. And if you would like to contact me in some other way, get more information, or listen to past episodes, you can go to www.christianarchy.net. That's christianarchy.net. In case you're confused because I gave you an address without a zip code, I should inform you it's not a real place, it's just a website. You should understand the internet by now, guys. I have received some responses from people close to me about my discussion of these ideas and my insistence upon them. I have been encouraged at times not to express them, or to express them with less surety, or in a way which people will not find as challenging. From what I've gathered, they believe me to be wasting my time or pushing people away with my thoughts about why Christians should be anarchists. Perhaps others listening have felt similar. So I'm going to explain a little bit more today about why this issue is one I am passionate enough about to monologue on every single week. My hope for this is multifold. I hope some will see at least why this is an important personal pursuit, and I hope others will begin to see it as an important pursuit as well. And perhaps there are some who will take up the fight themselves and, in their own way, seek to end the state. I have many reasons for my passion for getting rid of government. Possibly some of these will connect with your heart. I think eliminating the government is one of the next big areas of progress for basic human rights. In the West, at least, there has been a lot of progress in many areas of human rights over the last couple of centuries. Human rights are about equalizing the power of one group over and against and as compared to another. These movements are about acknowledging everyone has the same basic value and no one group should have special exceptions to mistreat another. Yet this is what the government has. The government is the group above its citizens who can treat them in ways they would never be allowed to treat each other. People in government claim the right to use violence and the threat of violence to force others to do their bidding. This artificial rights differential between people is evil. What if society said this? White people have a right to use violence and the threat of violence to force black people to do their bidding. No one would accept this difference in rights. The only difference between these two scenarios is the terminology. I think one of the next big steps in the equalization of human rights is the abolition of the state. I made a comparison that I think is fair between the government and slavery a couple of episodes back. Slavery was the use and threat of violent force against others in order to exercise ownership of them. Government is the use and threat of violent force against others in order to exercise ownership of them. Just because the government masters exercise slightly less ownership than most historic slave owners doesn't make it suddenly become something other than slavery. I am against slavery and therefore against government. I consider myself to be one of the abolitionists of my era. If this sounds delusional or grandiose, I understand your feeling. I don't think I'm one of the great leaders of the movement or anything like that. I'm not a William Wilberforce or Frederick Douglass, William Lloyd Garrison, or even Harriet Tubman, although I'm often mistaken for her. I think about myself more like your everyday man in the mid-1700s who looked at the world, saw people being owned by other people, and thought, this is not right. I understand this has been a part of the world for millennia, but still, slavery is not right. People shouldn't be treated this way. I must say something. So my sense of mission in this area is pretty strong. If I was in the middle of a world with more horrific slavery than what is occurring now, like the early 1800s, I suspect it would be stronger. At any rate, this is not some sort of unimportant side issue for me. It's not one of those ancillary discussions about who's going to be atop the NFC North this year, or what draft moves the Packers need to make to go back to the Super Bowl. Of course, these are vital issues to the well-being of humanity as well, but I can put them aside without much of a problem. The issue of government comes out of my relationship with Jesus in the same way the issue of slavery arose from many of the abolitionists' belief in Christ. I don't see the abolition of government as necessarily a distraction from the central message of Jesus any more than the abolition of slavery was a distraction from the central message. One brief verse which goes through my head with some frequency is from Matthew 5, verse 9. Jesus is in the introductory part of his famous Sermon on the Mount, not like Jesus' other diatribes, which aren't famous at all. Some call this part of the Sermon on the Mount the Beatitudes. He is talking about the type of people who are blessed, the type of people who are fit for the kingdom he is bringing. One such statement is a helpful reminder to me. He says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God." While the text uses the word son particularly, this can also be a general way of talking about both the male and the female children. It could say, children of God. But one of the underlying themes of the Beatitudes is that Jesus is the fulfillment of all of them. Jesus, at one time or another, exemplifies the characteristics of these statements of blessing. So using the word sons is also a subtle reminder that Jesus is the perfect son who contains all of the characteristics of his father. That being said, if you're a daughter, the text applies just as much to you. Sure, the idea of being blessed is nice, but I really like this blessing is about being a son of God. I like the verse because it relates being a peacemaker to being God's child. This means God is someone who is very concerned about bringing peace. Peacemaking is a way of showing you consist of the same stuff as your father. By making peace, you are putting on display that you share in the genetics of God. You're like him, an imitator of him, in the same way a son would imitate his father. There are lots of ways of being a peacemaker in the world. One can be a generally kind person to those who are aggressive. One can stand up against those who are using or threatening violence on others. One can mediate escalating conversations and keep things as amicable as possible. And I try to do these things when they come up, but these are usually just ways to make peace when the opportunity arises. It's not really taking the initiative on peacemaking. And these are relatively small fish to fry. But the state, the government, they are the real significant violent perpetrators. As you've heard from me repeatedly, for the state to do anything, it requires violence. Hopefully by now I've ingrained it into your head. Whether you agree or not, at least you know where I'm coming from. For the government to do anything, they first need funding to pay people to do things. To acquire funding, they tax people. And taxation is where the government says, give me what you've earned or die. If we lived in a civilized society, we would call the taking of someone else's property through threats robbery. But the uncivilized government uses their many euphemisms and calls it taxation. If I did it to you, I'd be rightfully thrown in jail. If they do it to you, you're supposed to be thankful and proud of yourself for doing your civic duty. Anyway, Every act of the government relies on this violence. It would be nice if that was all they did, but they are way, way worse than this. Government doesn't just rob. Governments murder people like crazy. There is the out-of-control police in the U.S. every year, killing hundreds of unarmed people annually. And thankfully, a lot of their misconduct is caught on video now, but they still aren't being charged for it. But forget about the police. They barely kill anyone compared to governments at large throughout the last century. There is the most obvious bringer of death by government, war. Leaving aside the obscene economic destruction, which comes with war, and the opportunity cost of having a bunch of people trying to figure out how to kill other people instead of how to make the world better, war is a great destroyer of human lives. For the most part, governments are to blame. It seems most wars are either people using their government to take over another government, trying to take over and replace their own government, or fighting for government control. In the last century alone, well over 100 million people died as casualties of war. 100 million more were injured, and these numbers don't include the people who died because they couldn't survive in their now destroyed region. Whether or not war is necessary in these circumstances is a different question. Perhaps for many countries in different situations, the only way for them to defend themselves is war. Still, the reality is, having war at such a large scale is nearly impossible without governments. Take away the nationalistic pride, take away the draft, take away a person who grew up thinking there was something honorable about obeying their ruler, take away the collectivist groupthink of the state, take away the government propaganda, take away the idea that there is great honor in being the violent arm of the government overseas by joining the military. And now, how many soldiers are going to sign up to invade another country which isn't harming or endangering them? How many people will voluntarily pay the hundreds of billions to trillions of dollars it costs to invade another country if they are not themselves in danger of being invaded? I have no way of knowing the numbers, but here's my guess. Significantly less. If way less people are willing to fight a war of aggression, then the resources to defend the area being aggressed against will also be way less. This means way less death and destruction. Government uses the money it takes from people with violence to compound on its own evil with more violent aggressions against others. Let's say all the wars last century were necessary and would have happened without governments anyway, and the same number of people would have died. This is kind of a crazy thing to say, but for the sake of argument, let's pretend it's true. One of the greatest tragedies of the last century was war, but another set of tragedies, which caused more human death than even war, was government's violence against its own citizens. Government violence against its own people resulted in around 160 million people being killed in the 20th century. Obviously, the countries with the most millions killed by their own governments come from the nations with the biggest and most controlling types of governments, like the communists in the Soviet Union under both Lenin and Stalin, and the socialists in Hitler's Germany, and the Chinese communists. These two types of governments alone, communism and socialism, account for over half of government murders of their own people. Governments and those within them will do whatever it takes to keep and expand their power. Whether such a thing requires sending citizens to die in war or killing their own citizens who may pose a threat, this shouldn't be all that surprising. For the most part, people aren't so bad. Not everyone is a saint, but most people aren't going to kill anyone. Nor would they even consider such a thing a valid option. But there are exceptions, crazy exceptions. People who love the idea of ruling over others, and who are paranoid, and or blame massive groups of people in the world. Here is a horrible idea if you are concerned about these abnormally evil people acquiring power, which they can then use to abuse others. Create a government which centralizes the economic and military power of 100 million people and then places that power in the hands of a small few. If you provide an outlet for the power hungry to acquire power and use it to destroy others, they will probably try to do so. Get rid of such an outlet, and it becomes much more difficult to destroy on a mass scale. The U.S. government also has this ridiculous thing going on they euphemistically call a war on drugs. But that's really a silly term. You can't war against drugs if you're a government. You can only war against people. DEA agents don't train to shoot marijuana, tase cocaine, or bomb meth. They train to hurt people who have those substances. It's just another term the government uses to get people to go along with what they are doing, even though what they are doing is destructive to so many. And they haven't even been marginally successful in their absurd stated goal to keep people from using illegal drugs. They spend billions and kill thousands to accomplish nothing. Shocking, huh? That's not the government I know. The death toll of the drug war in the U.S. has been over 1,000 people a year for the last decade, although estimates are difficult because this isn't one of those areas the government is motivated to keep numbers on. If they did, people might not like how damaging it was and want to end their program. In Mexico, about 10,000 people die every year due to the drug war. The drug war is one of those rare wars which will either never be won or be won in an instant. If the government keeps terrorizing people because of what they grow, create, buy, sell, and ingest, then the drug war will continue until the end of time. If the government stops such ridiculous behavior, the drug war has been won. The death related to the violence of production and distribution of such products will decrease and then go away almost completely. The gangs which formed to protect, produce, and sell these products will either have to change and become an efficient business that is no longer on the black market but out in the open, or else they will be undersold and go out of business. People forget. In the U.S., people used to die over beer. Many gangs formed and were funded through producing and selling alcohol during the Prohibition. And then the government won the war against alcohol by making it legal. No longer were people being senselessly murdered over a few barrels of whiskey. The more the government gets its hands in, the more violence they do. So, maybe I'm less of an ideological pacifist than I used to be, but I'm more of anti-violence than I ever have been. I no longer support the biggest perpetrator of violence across the globe. I would say if I want to be a peacemaker, I'm moving in the right direction. Another reason I'm against the government is because I love people in general. I hate seeing people mistreated. I hate hearing about how the government's monopoly on security, the police, abuse their power. I hate seeing people unjustly forced to submit to someone else when they've done nothing to hurt another person. What a horrible way to treat your fellow human being. More specifically, I love the poor. They are one of the most debilitated and constrained groups by government. I may do a whole episode on this at some point, so I won't go into too much detail. Of course, there are the things like drug laws and other non-criminal offenses, which the government considers criminal, that have a disproportionate effect on the poor. But there are a lot worse things than this. I live in a hyper-regulated world. This makes everything more expensive. With few exceptions, every law adds a cost burden to someone. Perhaps the laws add burdens to farmers, retail stores, service providers, insurance, or landlords, or something like that. But it's not these people who are ultimately paying the cost. They can't afford to run a business without profit, and so they increase the cost of whatever they are providing. The more laws the government creates, the more expensive things get. Obviously, this increase in cost has a much greater impact on those without as much money keeping them from breaking out of their poverty if they should want to. Hyperregulation also makes it prohibitively difficult to start, run, and grow a business for many, especially for those who don't have much to start with. If you're running a company, even if the entire staff of the company is just you, regulations cost money. For the largest of companies and well-established companies, functioning within a highly regulated market is easier because they have the money to hire people to help them do so, they are already aware of how to do so, and they have the size to absorb some of the costs of the laws which restrict their business. But what about those who start out with very little? Good luck not only facing the normal difficulties of running a business, but also, depending on the line of work, spending many hundreds of hours accounting and learning the thousands of laws you have to follow. And then there is the problem of the dollar. Over the last 100 years, the dollar has lost about 96% of its value. The government has a monopoly on currency, and thus no motivation to maintain the value of their currency. There is no competition to hold them accountable. And guess who this really hurts? Those who have very little money to begin with. Those who don't have the resources to protect their money with large-scale market investments. Those who are unaware the devaluation of their money is even happening. Those who don't have the finances to take advantage of the currency's decreasing value. Generally speaking, the value reduction of the dollar is yet another government policy which destroys what little wealth the poor have and decreases the value of whatever wages they are earning. Another thing purported to help the poor, which I would argue actually harms them, is the welfare state. There is something debilitating about getting paid to not work. I don't want anyone to starve, and I think society should take care of those who cannot take care of themselves. I'm not heartless, but the welfare state has a way of destroying the human spirit. I have heard so many people living off government money say a variation of, "I can't get a job because if I do, then the government will no longer pay me not to work." So they don't work even though they can. It is common sense. If you pay people for not working, then you should expect more people not to work. They will be motivated not to work because they are paid for their lack of activity. You are disincentivizing productivity and incentivizing laziness. It encourages people to live in poverty because it is free for them to do so. It is one thing to help someone and provide them food and shelter so they can survive if they have no ability to provide for themselves at the time. It is quite another to provide people with food, shelter, free healthcare, and enough resources to have a car, a television, cable, internet, computers, cell phones, among other amenities. It takes away all motivation they might have for finding ways to add to society for their own benefit. For the most part, and I'm sure there are some exceptions, it is not as if people living off the government are using their free time and resources to follow their dreams and see what they might do to help improve the world. There may be some cases like this, but most people who are paid not to work are using their available time to not do much of anything. Eventually, many acquire a sense of entitlement to what they are receiving. This sense has a way of crushing the human spirit. They have no need, and so they do very little of substance. A life of unearned comfort has a weird way of shaping people, so they never really come alive. They just survive. I don't blame those who live off the system for doing so. Honestly, there are aspects of it that sound awesome, but it doesn't usually lead to positive outcomes for those who do it. The real problem is the system itself. And I haven't even talked about the way government just flat out steals money from the poor. That goes without saying at this point. I also love the rich. Now, I'm not talking about the rich who use government to acquire monopolies, get bailed out, and otherwise get more money from the government. I love them, but I really hate those actions. And I'd like to see all the businesses which use the government to hinder their competition fail. However, those with a lot of wealth who acquire it without using the government or otherwise violating the non-aggression principle quite often acquire their wealth by making the world a better place. To get rich through voluntary relationships requires making a lot of people's lives better. One may make a product a lot of people want to buy, so they sell many people the product. The people who bought the product thought the product was worth more than what they were paying for it, and the person who sold it thought the money was worth more than the product. Both groups benefited. As more and more people want the product maker needs to ramp up business. So he finds investors to give him money to grow his company. The investors believe their investment will benefit them. The man who needs money to grow his business believes finding investors will benefit him. And it does. And then he needs to hire more people to make his product. He offers people a wage which will benefit him, and those people who become employees accept a wage which they think will benefit them. So again, this man keeps getting richer by engaging in voluntary and mutually beneficial economic relationships. All the while, he is selling more and more products consumers want. His cooperative relationships with customers, investors, and employees are benefiting all parties involved. The man who gets rich through ethical and good relationships like these gets rich by helping others. The more mutually beneficial relationships he can create, the richer he will get. What I don't want to do to people like this is restrict them through lawmaking or harm them by stealing their profit. I want them to be encouraged through the natural rewards which come from positive economic relationships with other self-owned human beings. He is making the world a better place to live. Let's leave him alone to do so. Some of the most beautiful things in life happen with complete anarchy, and the most ugly things happen with people ruling over other people. Marriage is a perfect example. My marriage is complete anarchy. I don't rule over my wife, and she doesn't rule over me. When we first decided to get married, do you know how we decided? I asked her to marry me, and she said yes. Marriage is beautiful when it's voluntary. If my marriage was not complete anarchy, it would be a pretty nasty thing. What if, instead of asking my wife to marry me, I told her she must marry me or I would lock her in a cage? She decides to marry me, but only because of my violent threats. Our marriage, which was lovely when there was anarchy, would be absolutely disgusting if one of us was ruling over the other. Ruling over other people is an ugly thing. Coercion can take even the most beautiful of relationships and make them nasty. The more anarchy in the world, the more lovely the world becomes. Finally, I think what I am saying is important enough to say, and I don't know very many people who will say it. I would gladly shut my mouth if there were more voices out there, but who else is going to do it? Will you? Do you know people who will? I don't. None of my friends will. There are some in the world who do, but so few compared to those who seek to justify the evil of government. So I'll join the few. Not because I think I'm well suited for it, or particularly knowledgeable or effective, or I'm just dying to hear myself rant, but because the initiation of violent force on otherwise peaceful people is evil. And I don't want to live in a world where pacified people sit back and watch their fellow human beings being mistreated without saying something, without shedding light on the evil behavior done in the dark.